Welcome to the QP Diaries podcast. This podcast is all about inspiring and empowering the next generation of QP professionals and future quality assurance leaders in the UK pharmaceutical industry. On every episode, I'll be speaking to QPs from across the industry, and our listeners will have the opportunity to hear their stories, their expertise, and we'll be discussing topics to foster growth and learning to help you develop your career as a qualified person. If you're passionate about quality assurance and want to learn from some of the very best QPs and thought leaders from across the industry, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Dal Pawar, the founder of Assure Bio, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Rebecca, welcome to the QP Diaries podcast. How are you today?
Good morning. Well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Good morning to you as well. Yeah, it's a privilege to have you on the show. I'm looking forward to hearing your career journey as a quality assurance and QP professional and hearing more about your expertise and your accomplishments throughout your career. And when we had our discussions around the topic of choice, there were a number of directions that we could have gone down, but I think we did zone in on a few quite interesting areas. So today we are going to be covering your thoughts on leadership, of course, with a wealth of quality leadership in your career. Team collaboration, of course, the tools and the methodologies that you use, and the future of what you'll be using as well. And then also sort of zoning in on your best advice for aspiring QPs. So we do have quite a lot to cover today, Rebecca.
So let's get on.
Yeah, let's get into it. So but before we do get started, though, for those who don't know you, can you share a brief overview of your career in quality assurance to date, please?
Sure. So my quality journey started when I was introduced to a QP as a project manager working for a clinical trials CRO, and introduced to the concept of what they did, why they were so important, and what their processes were that they were going through in order to be able to release clinical trial product. I worked in the ATMP space for over a decade in manufacturing and setting up in those sort of clinical trials areas, taking concepts through R&D and into that first time in human space, and then moved to GSK, where as a strategy, as a QP, you really need to learn how to make, you know, traditional pharmaceutical products, paracetamol, inhalers, etc., rather than just the shiny new stuff that technology and science is bringing through at the moment. So I began my career at GSK learning all the different types of products that they make in their portfolio, understanding how that is the same as and different to ATMP manufacturing, and became a QP a few years ago now. And in that time, I then switched from a purely quality role into a manufacturing role. So my last project for GSK was to set up a greenfield ATMP manufacturing site for their CAR T therapy productions in the UK and take that through. So that was really where the sort of the two leadership roles that I've had have been in a very small company and then in a much larger global pharmaceutical company and organisation, but focusing on that manufacturing capability, all of the other IT technology related infrastructure that goes with a manufacturing facility and a manufacturing site.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. So your expertise, well, started in sort of advanced therapies, biotechnology products.
Yes, it did really. And looking back on that, that's quite a number of years ago now, actually.
Yeah. I suppose your career was opposite to most QPs then, because they will learn the more about traditional pharmaceutical products and then translate that and develop into learning more about advanced therapies. So, yeah, you did it the opposite way around.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's fascinating to learn about all of the different types of manufacturing, that sort of traditional pharma, how to make a little white pill versus how to make something that you're not quite too sure what you're testing for, and it's a bit new, and it's biology, so everything's a little bit more interesting, and you know, bigger parameters to go to, very, very tightly controlled processes that people have been using for decades and honing to a really high standard, and learning about that, you know, the differences in tolerance. But it's a fascinating journey through the pharma industry.
Yeah. And when did you qualify as a QP?
2019. So, yeah. And went into global roles, supply chain management, using all those quality skills to develop a global quality supply chain system and process that would be helpful for a corporation level. But obviously within that is understanding all the nuances of all the different markets. So a QP may be releasing a bulk batch of product, but it could be going to multiple markets with multiple different needs, multiple different national standards. And all of that is a QP's responsibility to understand, to assure, to make sure that the drug product they are certifying is fit for purpose in all of the countries that it is intended to be used in.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I suppose, that leads us on to the sort of first area of discussion. So the term team collaboration is used quite a lot. We hear it throughout quality leadership, and you in your career have held multiple leadership roles and developed some robust quality teams. So from your perspective, how important is collaboration within quality assurance teams and also then within other departments within an organisation?
It's mission critical. Absolutely mission critical. There is an often used phrase of quality starts with everybody. And it is true. If you do not understand where in the supply chain and the manufacturing process your role sits and the decisions that you could be making as finance, as procurement, as a warehouse manager, as somebody taking samples, as somebody on a line, all of those decisions that people take every day in their working lives can impact the quality of the product. How somebody handles the data, how somebody assesses data, how somebody communicates that gut feel, or actually, I know this process, this to me is looking out of trend, can be the difference between making really good decisions on really sound data and having to do those much, much deeper dives when something becomes very problematic future point down the line. And when you're looking at that transition space from the scientists who have these amazing ideas and develop them into novel potential products, translating that from the R&D bench into your primary manufacturing site, your first time in humans clinical trials, and then taking that and onwards developing into scaling up or scaling out the technological advances that need to be made, the process engineering parameters that you have to consider, your critical quality attributes. They're not quality defined things. Everybody in that process has to come together to assure that the product is as good as it can be at all stages of its development process and onwards into continued supply. So for me, yes, I'm a QP. Yes, I have a legal responsibility, routine and legal duties that I have to assure are carried out for every single batch which is certified. But equally as important is the person who's got a problem, who's got a question, whose day-to-day job could reveal something really interesting, critical piece of information that unlocks a whole different level of understanding. So a lot of operational QPs will need to and have to have all these soft skills to talk and understand, and a base level of knowledge and understanding of topics to be able to understand and receive the information that they're getting, but also sensibly communicate, question, ask, interpret with the experts, because you're not an expert in everything as a QP. And there is no way you could be an expert in everything involved in manufacturing, design, development, and processing as a QP. So you need to be able to understand what these experts are telling you and take it on board and be able to put that into a bigger picture and ask the why, how, what, where questions that we all know and love from our root cause analysis that we all end up doing, to get to what does this mean? Have I a risk here? Is it a mitigated risk? What's the impact to a patient? Does it have impact on patient safety, quality, efficacy of product, etc.? So the best teams, the best organisations, be it manufacturing site, be it an entire company, are where people understand and know their job, have the respect for others because they know and understand their role, but also they understand how everybody comes together and how that data, that process, that information becomes a massively important resource that everybody can feed into, use, and understand and take things out of. And of course, with AI and machine learning coming on, our data lakes are going to get much, much bigger, much more complex. The interdependencies are going to become perhaps less obvious, perhaps more obvious. And how are we going to take that and use it, to make it the tool that is going to be of benefit to everybody? So when I'm talking, setting up teams, when I think about how I've set up teams and how I've led people through change management, through moving facilities, through setting up new facilities, through redundancy even, how do those people actually work together? What are their strengths? What are their weaknesses? Does everybody understand what the mission is, what the purpose is, and how their role leads to that mission and purpose? And then creating a culture of trust and reliability where people can say, I'm not sure, I have a concern, can we discuss, please? And not just within their teams, but across the platform, across all the different functions and specialities that come together. So quality is everybody's responsibility is absolutely true, absolutely vital. But leadership and creating that culture of trust, of responsibility, of speaking up, of questioning, curiosity, is the leader's responsibility, but the team's responsibility to engage with as well. And it's not just your team, those who report to you, it's your team, everybody that comes in, your stakeholders, all of your people that you report into, that you interact with, that need your data, are your customers of your data or your output as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of words there. I mean, communication on a number of occasions, empowering people, being an authentic leader. Do you have any real life examples which highlight the importance of collaboration, communication, or on the flip side of that, the impact of where it doesn't go so well and no one is communicating, and what impact does that have on quality?
Yes, I mean, when my last role was to set up a greenfield manufacturing site and tech transfer in platform technologies and take those through the regulatory process, certification and on to clinical trials. And this was a team who had on the R&D side, they developed a process. They'd got all the equipment, they'd worked out what the parameters were, fabulous, you know, really deep technical understanding of what was going on and why it was going on. But they'd had the luxury of working in an uncontrolled environment. So walking from here to here or taking things or going and getting something that they needed at a certain point in the process, no real barriers to that. Translating this into a clean room activity, a manufacturing suite, which is operating, everybody has to gown up. There is a process for it. You can only have a certain number of people in a certain area at a time. Bringing equipment in, bringing consumables in, that cleaning through process, and the time that added suddenly started to introduce some stress points in the process that were not apparent in the development phase, but became very apparent when we were trying to GMPify them and replicate the processes in a GMP environment. And so there was an education piece of, you know, please come to our facility, please come and spend a day with us and understand that it will take us half an hour to work through all our processes to get to a point where the humans are in the room, correctly gowned, not having compromised the integrity of the environment. The consumables have come into the manufacturing area, again, correctly, without compromising that environment. Why the compromising of the environment was so important. And then that you can't just come out to do a 20-minute phone call with somebody because you need to ask a question. You're in this very, very controlled environment. And what does that mean in terms of if something goes wrong? So how much technical knowledge needs to be passed on what technology can we implement that will allow people real-time troubleshooting or training even to go in there? And then understanding how, from the manufacturing team, who were very much used to working in a GMP environment, understood the parameters of entering and exiting clean rooms. But for them to understand, how did this come into being? How would this process come to exist in the manner that it existed? And bringing that communication level, including the quality side of the organization. And what did it mean? What were our parameters? What could we ask our R&D colleagues to do in terms of looking at parameters and understanding what the tolerances were versus where could we say, actually, we could speed this up. Actually, we need to do something different. We need to think more cleverly about this. And it did take time, because there was the sort of the understanding, well, we've created a process, so please can you execute our process, versus we can't quite execute the process, but we need to know where our limits are. We need to understand where we can flex, and where it needs development, and where we need additional things. So filter integrity testing, for instance, had to be developed in the manufacturing suite. How is that practically done? What can we do? What equipment do we need? And so on. So that was a really good example of people from very, very diverse, very specialist technical people in their own rights, in their own fields, coming together as a multidisciplinary team to understand the problem, first and foremost, and then to work around how do we address the problem? Is it really a problem? How do we address it if it really is a problem? And how do we move forwards? And it was really heartening to see in my team, where I had everybody from process engineers, validation, IT and technical, through manufacturing, quality, in-process quality control testing, etc., all coming together in one facility. And the questions, why? Well, I need to do this, but it would be better if you could give me this at this time point, because then I can do this. And then you get the answer quicker, or you get your data quicker, or I'm then able to help you with the next step because I've set this up and, you know, my parameters, my timelines are whatever they were. And getting that team spirit and collaboration going. And it was fantastic to see these people coming together, developing these bonds, these ways of working, and hearing at times people saying, it's okay. We thought we had this problem, but I went and had lunch with so-and-so, or I put in a half-hour chat and we think we've got a solution. It's this. And coming with proposed solutions. So they felt empowered not only to identify what they considered to be a potential problem, but also to go away and work out how to solve the problem. And then, even better, present the solutions with, do you endorse this? Do you agree? Please give me your input feedback to the quality, the senior technical people, manufacturing people, IT as necessary, etc. So seeing people develop and go through that journey and having the confidence in themselves, not just their technical skills, their interpersonal skills as well, to go through that journey and come through was fabulous. It was an amazing time to be a leader.
Yeah, I can imagine. You can see your passion during that experience when you were leading those teams. And it sounds like you provided a platform for them to have those communication channels and that trust and that empowerment to get them to talk and to get them provide solutions and then implement them as well.
Yeah, very, very much. So, you know, there's the old adage, you can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make a drink. And the same thing with people. Trust takes time. It's not something you earn. It's not something you're given as a leader just because you walk into the role. You have to deliver for your team. And that might be delivering on small things. You know, it's a small matter to you, somebody's problem. But actually, if they can't, I was working with a team at a time when the railway strikes were just, and they still are, horrific in the UK. Absolutely horrific. And at short notice, and people were saying, I physically can't, I cannot do all the things I need to do and get here on time. What can we do? And they were stressing about it because they felt it was letting people down. It wasn't, you know, doing this, but also, well, if I get here and I can't get home because all of a sudden there's a train being cancelled at the last minute, what do I do? Now, that's a relatively straightforward thing to fix as a leader, because you can offer people accommodation closer to the site. You can offer people taxis home, you know, if they don't drive or whatever. You can arrange parking if they need parking on site. There's a lot of things that you can do to empower those people. But you can't ignore the stresses that people have outside of the work life, as well as those that they have inside of the work life. So being able to be open and give people that time, so when they come to you with a problem, you can talk through what are the solutions, point them in the right direction. Sometimes it's mentoring and coaching. You know, well, I would consider doing this, or have you spoken to so-and-so? Would you like me to introduce you to them? Maybe you can work together on this. How about you feedback to me after you've done that? Come and see me in a couple of days when you've spoken to this person, had time to think about it. We can plan the next steps. Sometimes it's, that's okay. I'll sort the permissions out. I'll resolve the, you know, the corporate side, and this will be fine. Sometimes it's just, do you know what? Yeah, this is a rubbish situation. And right, is there anything we can do about it, or do we have to change? Do we have to accept and deal with it? So you don't get given trust as a leader. You do have to earn it. Equally, as a team member, you don't get given trust. You do have to earn it. So that two-way communications, making time for each other, even if it's, can we do a virtual coffee?
Yeah.
Or we're all stopping for lunch at this time. Could you be around and have lunch with us? Being present and there for them. Same as in your personal life, the greatest gift you can give people is your time and your ears. So doing that and being the leader who does it. You have to walk the walk as well. There's no point saying, well, everybody will be in at 8 o'clock in the morning if you rock up reliably about 10:30 when you finish doing this. Unless that is, you're very clear with, well, it is different for me because I'm already doing this, or so and so. We're all, as leaders, navigating return to work, return to office, different corporation strategies with that, how that impacts your team, how their lives have changed and developed. That's going to be an interesting one for leaders, I think, managing that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of leaders are going through this pain right now, aren't they? And trying to get people back in the office, or balancing the hybrid working. And yeah, as you say, you've got to be quite empathetic to people's situations and have the emotional intelligence to pick up on signals, which if someone's struggling or if they need that support, as you say, virtual coffee, whatever it may be, then do it.
It's there. But also, as a leader, you need to understand your mission, your vision, your purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there are times when the job is the job, and the mission and the vision and the purpose are what they are. And sometimes people's lives do not always align.
Yeah.
And that's another set of difficult conversations. And you can read all you like and listen to all you like about how to have difficult conversations. They're never going to become an easy conversation. They really aren't. You will have a strategy for managing it, but it's never going to be an easy conversation. And leading people through times of change, which everything is in a state of flux and a state of change. As a society, return to work, for instance, but corporations have reorganizations, product development might not go the way product development was intending. There could be data that comes down the line that leads in a different direction. Change is what we live with as humans in our working lives on a day-to-day basis. And understanding that and seeing how people handle change, what they need to handle change, allowing them to understand it and understand what you need as a leader because you're leading through change, is really powerful and really empowering. And if you think about the quality thing, change controls, I mean, you know, by definition, this is a change. Everybody has to do something different. Everybody, it might be a reaction because something has gone wrong. It might be an evolution from continuous improvement. There could be a lot of reasons why change in quality has to happen, but how does that positive experience, how can that be made to be a positive, helpful experience rather than a very, very stressful we've got to do 12 cappers. They're all outstanding. We've got timelines coming up. What are we going to do about it? That's change, and that's handling change as a leader and change as a team, as well as we're going through a reorg and we all might lose our jobs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but conversations, building relationships, understanding each other, understanding yourself. There is a lot of understanding yourself in there, and then how you can have those conversations. Where are the boundaries? Do there need to be boundaries? And if so, what are they? How do you communicate them? Do you agree on them? And bringing that, you know, understanding of everybody, giving people the empowerment that they can come to work, do a good job, deliver, be themselves in a professional capacity, in a professional environment, because we're all different depending on what environment we're in. And being authentic at work is not necessarily as being authentic in a nightclub or when you're at a concert or something like that. But your joie de vivre or everything will come through, just probably in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for sharing that, Rebecca. And then I suppose digging a bit deeper on the, I suppose, the technical aspect of setting up a new facility. So with that in mind, you've been through this process recently. Are there any emerging trends in quality, any tools, methodologies, which you used or you can foresee will be quite significant in the future?
For me, you cannot underestimate the IT infrastructure and your technology infrastructure that you have in place. We're all used to things like building management systems. We're all used to on large automated pharmaceutical lines, vision control systems, etc. But technology and the software capability is radically expanding. I think for anybody in manufacturing quality, especially understanding what is AI, how is it used? If you are in a company who's on the cutting edge of machine learning and that's being incorporated into a medical device, for instance, what does that actually mean? So upskilling, anybody in the quality world, upskilling and understanding this technology, software, IT, AI, machine learning space, I think will be critical going forwards. At the end of the day, a lot of quality processes are based on a human second check. That, you know, be it four eyes because you're writing down a piece of data from an instrument and somebody else is second checking it, which we should just absolutely do away with. There's no reason why bits of kit can't talk to a central repository. To producing automated results on a LIMS system, pass fail criteria, etc. You know, process capability, assessments and understanding in your periodic product quality reviews or whatever you choose to call those. All of that, I think, with the amount of data that we generate as the pharmaceutical industry, with the number of different parameters that the quality organisation either reviews on behalf of the QP or the QP has to review before certification, there is going to have to be a way of going to release by exception. Of those parameters and understandings and those machine controls, those software controls becoming more robust, omnipresent, and giving that validated state of assurance for your processes going forwards. It is going to mean that jobs become less number crunchy, sit at a desk, but that means humans can do the bit that they are fab at, which is, okay, that there is a trend detected here. Why? We are very curious as a species. We're very good at asking those questions and delving deep if you're the technical expert. Why should you have to spend several days crunching something, putting it into Excel, validating all your data? Machines are much better than that. Let the machines give the data, give the indication, and let humans use their intelligence and their capability of understanding and the fantastic things that happen in people's brains where they take disparate pieces of information and go, but look, this could be an answer here. and make that so that we can develop. And I think as the pharmaceutical industry, the more data you give to people with that amazing potential to make the connections and to make the understandings, the more development we're going to see. Hopefully the faster products will come to market, the better any process improvements will be, the better continuous development will be, which can only mean that patients get better drugs faster, more efficiently, more reliable. So we've benefited human health at that point. So that's my wish. I think release by exception should be something every company aims for. I think integrated LIMS, integrated manufacturing execution systems, they're there. They've been used in other industries for decades. Let's embrace them as the pharma industry. Let's understand them. Let's take them where they need to go. Let's get rid of the drudgery, the human checks, and allow humans to do what they're really good at, making those innovative decisions, making those innovative leaps. And that, again, goes back to a culture of trust and integration and talking and communication so that those ideas and those sparks can happen and go from there. That's what I think will happen. That would be my watch out for not just new people in the quality space, but existing quality professionals. Do you understand IT? Do you understand the principles of it? Do you understand where they want to go and why they want to go there? Why is it a good thing? It's not that long ago that vision systems on high-speed packaging lines were new. We got through that okay. They did good things. A healthy degree of scepticism, but perhaps with an open mind and an open heart would be a good approach.
Absolutely, yeah. It sounds like you've very much got an open mind when it comes to the advancements in technology. And that, with that in mind, because the technology is advancing so quickly, in particular in last year with the more and more knowledge around AI and what impact that's going to have, especially for, say, a QP. So what advice would you give to people to stay on top of this and to understand the latest trends?
I think if you can actually answer the question, what's the difference between artificial intelligence and machine learning? And then what in that broad definition, what would work in your personal circumstances, your corporate circumstances, what is going to make the biggest difference? So checking, you know, a machine can go and check the registered details and then confirm that the packaging that was used in this particular batch is per the registered details and the most up to date. When you're changing packaging, if you're making updates or corrections, controlling that and having some system that literally will not allow it on the packaging line, will literally cordon it off in the warehouse and you know, put a gate down and say, no, this pallet is not available. You can put it on a destruction, but you can't put it anywhere else. We'll stop a lot of the errors that we see. And it stops the human checking. So humans are pretty bad, actually, at spotting errors. We all have our own error rate. So give the mundane tasks to a system which is good at doing that. Don't expect it to take over. The difficult decisions as a QP that you come across in those grey areas, that risk understanding, that risk decision making, that will be difficult, I think, to automate, to have any sort of AI or machine learning piece going in. Not impossible, not right now, but understand how you can integrate it, get comfortable with it. So what would make sense to do? Talk to people who are developing the tech, read about it in the other industries which are already trying to implement this and what are the successes. And in that, you understand what the potential pitfalls are. So if you were presented with 25 references on something, are you going to go and check them all? Probably, good idea. You do it if it was a human, so do it. Build your confidence up. It's like sampling. Do you have a degree of confidence? Does history say that over time that confidence has already been met by the supplier for the product? okay, we can do reduce cycling, but build your confidence first.
Yeah, so essentially there needs to be a willingness to accept the technologies first and foremost. And then, yeah, from there, it's just understanding it, as you say, building the confidence. You have that knowledge base within the organisation, within the teams to really
be curious.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, excellent. Yeah, no, as I said, it sounds like you've got a good grasp on the future, which is good. And with that in mind as well, for anyone who's sort of as a trainee QP, a junior QP, currently going through, I suppose, all of the learning and development that you've already been through in your career, what advice would you give to any aspiring quality assurance professional, trainee QP, just starting their careers and their journey?
I would ask yourself, why do you want to do this? Why is this career pathway really triggering your interests? Look at what the study guide says. It's on all three of the Royal Society's web pages about QPs. And think critically about it. So where do your technical strengths and understandings lie? What does that mean in terms of gaps in your knowledge? Can you perhaps take a sideways movement in your career or a secondment or something like that, which would allow you to work in those technical environments and gain that understanding and that knowledge? As a QP, you're very much in the practical operations side of it. So if you don't have the understanding, it's going to be very difficult for you to come to any sensible conclusions about issues, potential issues and problems and risks. And think that sideways, good forwards is, everybody thinks, oh, forwards are progression. Progression can be breadth. So sideways movements, it's not good to go sideways for your entire life, probably, but can you gain some experience that you wouldn't gain otherwise by doing something same level but different part of the organization, different focus. And then your base, technical base of knowledge and understanding will be there, and that will allow you to then progress. And think critically. If you've got the opportunity within your role and something comes up, think critically about it. Take advantage of your mentors and your coaches. Any formal program that your employer offers, grab it with both hands, invest your time in it, because you will gain mentors outside of your quality organization are really good to give you different perspectives. So supply chain is a good example, logistics, procurement, understanding what's driving them, what are their parameters, how can you feed into it? And take on board what those people who are offering to be your coach or offering to be your mentor in these related parts of the organisation can give to you, can help with your understanding. Coaching and mentoring pays off. Maybe immediately you might get somebody who says, well, yes, I've got a secondment in my team, or I've heard about so-and-so and so-and-so, come along. Networking in general is majorly beneficial. At the end of the day, people do not stay in the same job for all their life anymore. It's increasingly rare. And companies do get taken over by other companies and divested by other companies. So even if you were to technically have the same employer, the chances are it would evolve and change over time. So how can you broaden your network? Who can you go to? We all have responsibilities as QPs to maintain our continued professional development and understanding, and log and register those. But what does that look like for you? Are you talking, if you're the QP in an organisation, how can you make a network of other QPs? Who are you in training with right now? Who do you like? Make the connections. Talk to them. Go back to them. Get involved in workshops. Get involved in the Royal Society, different special interest groups, for instance. Talk to those people. Maintain the contacts with them. Ask them questions. Develop your own network of, these are my trusted contacts, trusted mentors, trusted colleagues who I am comfortable going and asking to, and reciprocate. If somebody comes to you and wants to ask and wants be honest with them, be as much as you can, clearly not breaching any confidentiality rules with your employer or previous employers, but make yourself available. Not all day, every day. Nobody has time for that. But maybe you have an hour a month. That's what you dedicate to. You will either go and talk to your coaches, your mentors, or you may offer up coaching and mentoring. Everybody's experience is different. And be curious. It's not just about what's on, you know, the latest MHRA inspectorate blog that you should be interested in. What about the other organisations? What about other parts of the industry? There are specialist groups, specialist conferences that you can go to. Check them out. Don't necessarily go to the same conference every year. Maybe have a rotation so that you're over a period of 3 or 4 or 5 years, you're dipping in and out and understanding and keeping up to date with all the different tech. Would be suggestions. It's not a guidebook for anybody's report.
Yeah, well, I hear it quite a lot, that from especially senior QPs or senior quality leaders, their advice is to go and network as a junior QP or trainee, and to have a mentor who's going to be there for you consistently every month, having those one-to-one catch-ups and making sure that you're holding them accountable at the same time, just so you know you're going to stay on track. Do you have any recommendations for someone who needs a mentor, or any networking events maybe that you've attended?
I would say that as a QP, the Pharmaceutical Chemistry and Biology Societies run some really good annual courses, and a lot of QPs from across the UK make the effort to go and attend those. So it's a good thing to do. You should be registering your CPD with your Royal Society anyway. So keep that in mind. Be brave. If there isn't a formal mentoring or coaching program in your organisation, pick somebody that you admire or that you think you know sort of what their role might be, and ask. Give them the opportunity. If you want somebody outside of your organisations, who did you do your QP training with? A lot of people will have gone to a corporate course. It won't just be your people, your organisation who are in there. Who else did you meet? Who else have you connected with? There are workshops run by various organisations. Maybe that's a good way, a day, you know, every quarter or something, to go and attend the workshops. And then don't just rock up, but who's there? Make those connections. Talk to them. Work out where you can have mutual benefit to each other. Coaching and mentoring are two-way streets. You get as, in my experience, you get as much out of being a mentor as you do from mentoring.
Yeah.
You get as much out of coaching as you do being the coachee. So make sure. But if it doesn't work out, that's not a problem. If it's not doing what you want it to do, it's not a good investment of your time. So assess it. And I would suggest to anybody embarking on any form of coaching, mentoring, or even just general professional development, think critically about it. Be honest and upfront with yourself. What are you going to achieve out of this? What you want to achieve? And then did you achieve it? If you did, fabulous. And that's not a one time done. You should be critically assessing periodically as you go through, because your needs may change and evolve. So may your coaches, so may your mentors.
Yeah.
But be open to it. And it's not just people in the industry are easier to talk to. They will understand your shorthand. They will have their own understandings of the legislation, et cetera, et cetera. People outside the organisation can give you a slightly different perspective. Maybe that's helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very easy to have a mentor who talks the same language, technical language in particular. However, maybe get someone who's in a different department or who's a business leader who can give you a different perspective.
Yeah. Or look on LinkedIn. I mean, there are a lot of QP groups up and running on different topics, technical groups. Is there somebody there that you really admire whose posts you think, yeah, that was an intelligent comment, that really made me think? Be brave, approach them. You never know. They might turn around and go, well, terribly sorry, it's not appropriate, I haven't got the capacity, they might go, actually, that's really interesting. Yes, let's see if this works. There's no shame in asking.
Yeah.
And it can lead to some really good connections and really good working relationships, friendships. Even if you're in a situation where you may need to seek another job, those are your networks to start that role with, that search with. What's out there? How can they help you? How can you help them?
Yeah, brilliant bit of advice there, Rebecca. It's just asking, isn't it, really? And yeah, what's the worst that can happen? And if it does go well, that could accelerate someone's career. Thanks for sharing that.
Welcome.
Yeah, so we've covered quite a lot today, and it's been very inspiring hearing about your experiences and your knowledge and what you've shared so far. I do have one more question for you. So, well, very much based on what we've been talking about, what are your predictions for the future of quality in particular? How do you see the role of a QP evolving in the coming years?
So Brexit always made life interesting, and obviously there's a lot of the RPRPI roles which didn't exist before and now exist, so that is an opportunity for the quality organisation as a whole. For QPs, there used to be a stigma of they were a hurdle, a barrier to overcome before the product could be released. I think a lot has been done to change that concept and perception. The more people who the QPs interact with and say why they are asking questions or what is the driver that they need the data from, and engaging and making those connections and relationships and building trust with their SMEs, the more value a QP will bring to the organisation. A QP sits in a very unique position of having an awful lot of legal obligations, so they're very good at keeping people on the straight and narrow and ensuring compliance, but also having a bigger picture view. So where can they bring value? A license to operate for a pharmaceutical company is the be all and end all. Without that license from MHRA or equivalent, you really have no business. So how does that become the culture? What does a good quality culture look like? And how can the QP, with their overarching broad view, benefit corporate strategy, benefit corporate understanding, product development, product lifecycle management? Because they're there. They're the ones who are seeing this and have the understanding of it from their training and their ongoing training. So there's a lot of value I think QPs can bring to the business as a whole. And quality-driven, quality-focused organisations are more profitable because they make fewer mistakes. If you make fewer mistakes, you have better trust with your customers, with your regulators. And the entire world has had its supply chains shaken by COVID pandemic, and we're still feeling the repercussions of that. It focuses people's attention dramatically when they couldn't get paracetamol on the shelves. But there are other drugs which are still having those repercussions felt even now. And it does impact people's lives, patients' lives, but their families' lives as well. So how can the QP be visible in that? And let's face it, it is the most underwhelming title on the planet. The number of people who say, well, what are you qualified in? So building that general public awareness, I think, would be fantastic. I think we're in times of change, societally, globally, times of change, and being proud of your quality position, being able to enunciate clearly the benefits of it. What does it mean to the general public? What does it mean to your friends, to your relatives, to the wider society is always a good thing. So QPs as ambassadors.
Absolutely. Yeah. Keeping the patient in mind. And as you say, just ensuring the safety and quality of the medicines which have been delivered across the world.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And yeah, as you say, the impacts that they have on their families and friends around them as well. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, that's it, Rebecca. Thank you so much for being a guest on the QP Diaries. It's been wonderful hearing about your journey as a quality professional and sharing all your years and years of wisdom, which I'm sure will be very valuable to anyone who's listened to this as a QP or quality professional. If anyone wanted to reach out to you, you mentioned that to network and to mentor.
Absolutely.
Is LinkedIn the best way to do that?
Yep, have a look at me. I'm Rebecca Rutter, QP on LinkedIn, so come and find me there. I have a consultancy business, so if you need help, short-term, long-term, whatever, or just a little bit of project work, then feel free to reach out, but go build your networks.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, well, thank you so much, and you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, Dan. Bye.
Speak soon. Bye. A huge thank you to our special guest and to our listeners for tuning into the QP Diaries podcast. We hope you enjoy the show. As the founder of Assure Bio, we created the podcast to support our wider quality assurance community, which aligns to our dedicated offering as a recruitment agency, providing services to the pharmaceutical and biotech industry across the UK. We have over 15 years experience in the industry, exclusively focused on recruiting senior quality assurance leaders and QPs. If you want to learn more about Assure Bio's recruitment services, or if you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, then please don't hesitate to contact me. Thank you.